Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Hello, coaches, and welcome to the Home Team Podcast, where football coaches from around the country provide the coaching community with improvements to their game plans for winning as a husband and a father. Today we're speaking with Coach Joel Holtzclaw from Division II Winona State. Coach Holtzclaw joined Winona State's staff prior to the 2017 season after spending the previous 2 years at the University of Nebraska-Kearney as the run game coordinator and coaching offensive line. In 2 seasons at the University of Nebraska-Kearney, Joe had 4 all-MIAA offensive linemen and 4-year juniors and then seniors, Zach Beard and Luke Brown. Holtzclaw came to UNK following a 5-year stint at NAIA Hastings College, where he spent 4 falls as the offensive coordinator, offensive line, and tight end coach. During his tenure, he helped the Broncos win 25 games and was part of the 2014 offense, ranked 2nd in the Great Plains Athletic Conference and scoring 35 points a game and averaging 420 yards. In the spring and summer months, he was assistant for the Nebraska Danger of the Professional Indoor Football League. Leading the defensive line for 3 seasons and coaching offensive line for 1, Holtzclaw helped the Danger reach the United Bowl in 2013 and 2014, the IFL's championship game. He began his coaching career at his alma mater, serving as a graduate assistant in 2007 and 2008. He then remained on staff in 2009, leading the Bearcat tight ends. While in Maryville, Holtzclaw was part of the coaching staff that had 2 national runner-up finishes and won the 2009 national title. As a player and captain for the Bearcats, he was a 3-year starter along the offensive line who earned all MIAA honors as a senior. Holtzclaw was a starter for Northwest 2005 and 2006 national runner-up teams. Joe and his wife Danny live in Winona with their son Hayden and daughter Logan. All right, Coach Holtzclaw, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
That's great. Let's jump right in and start talking about what I call the stars of your home team, and beginning with your wife. How did you meet this special woman?
Well, my wife's name is Danny, and we went to college together at Northwest Missouri State, and we really didn't know each other then, but we both did our master's programs there. And one summer, we were back in St. Louis, and we met up kind of through a mutual friend and got to hang out. And then when we went back, obviously, we spent a lot of time. She was a football fan, and so we got to hang out, and it kind of built from there. It's a long process to really groom and make sure you have the right girl whenever you're already a graduate assistant. It's a terrible life to live. So she toughed through a lot just in that, but it was definitely a special place for both of us at Northwest. And so we had a lot in common in that regard.
And what is her background, and maybe what does she currently do?
Sure. Her background, she actually got her undergrad in nutrition, which I needed in my life, so that was a plus for me. And then she got her master's in health science. And her dad has been a longtime doctor. He's been a chief medical officer. He's been in the field for a long time. And her mom's a nurse practitioner, and her brother's in medical school. So it's just that type of a family. And so she is in healthcare. She works at the hospital here in town as in healthcare leadership and physician and recruitment. And she does a ton of different stuff. And actually, in both places here and in Nebraska where she worked at a hospital, she was on the recruitment side. But both places we've been, they've actually ended up creating leadership positions for her. So she's definitely a star in that regard. And that's a huge deal, obviously for us moving around and stuff, is her fit in those places.
I gotta go off the script here for a minute. Does she give you any advice about recruiting, or do you guys share advice about recruiting?
Absolutely. It's a huge no. I mean, we laugh because we get at home and we share stories. And I always say it's not fair because she gets to play with a lot more money than I do. I mean,
yeah, she does.
Dollars and sign-on bonuses and things like that. But the way you treat people is all very the same, very much the same. And, the welcoming baskets and, you know, involving their families. You know, we're dealing with parents, but she's dealing with wives and kids. And but the way that you get those people involved in the visit and the town tours and things like that are huge. And so, yeah, we have been connected on that for as long as she's been doing it. And she's very willing, you know, to give her advice. You know, sometimes the football world is tough to let someone like that in, but there's definitely, you can put a woman's touch on some of that stuff and make it seem a lot nicer and a lot better, you know, than what the football coaches could turn out. So it's a huge deal.
Yeah, and I bet you got to please mom, right? When mom comes on an official visit, you got to make sure mom feels good about it.
Absolutely.
I'm sure from that side.
Yeah, there's no difference. I mean, you know, her job is to figure out what's going to be the make or break in the situation, whether it's being close to family or all those things, and finding the ultimate decision maker, whether it's a child issue or a significant other or whatever it is. And we're doing the same thing. We're trying to figure out who is the ultimate decision maker, if it's dad, mom, or if they're just leaving it up to the child and the kid and stuff like that. So it is, it's all relative. And we talk a lot about it, and we talk a lot about ways to fix it, you know, and things like that. So it's awesome.
That's very neat to have that kind of common ground. Let's talk about some of the other members of your starting lineup, and that'd be your kids. If you wouldn't mind giving us their names, their ages, and maybe some of their interests.
Sure. So I've got three of them. Hayden, who's 6. Logan is almost 3. She goes by Lolo. And Kellen is 8 months old. And so just amazingly different guys, you know, and I'm obviously just getting started. We've got guys on staff that have teenagers and different ages, and so I get to kind of see how it's going to develop, and I try to, you know, I get to see goods and bads of all that stuff. But in terms of mine, you know, Hayden's imagination is his best trait. It's unbelievable. He loves building and creating, and part of the reason, you know, when we chose this place as a job, he loves outdoors already. Anything, he loves the snow. He'll go out there and play for hours in the snow, or if we can go hiking or any of those things, he's just in love with, and swimming and stuff. And Logan, we're just getting to kind of learn about, you know, she's 3. She's crazy. loves the dance. Yeah. I mean, she loves the dance and sing, and, at the end of the day, though, she's like the most snuggly little girl that you've ever seen. But she definitely gets some fire in her because her brother's been poking at her for 3 years. And that's going to be awesome to kind of see how that develops. And then Kellen, right now, you know, he loves mama. And that's about it. 8 months old, he hasn't done a lot. But he has been through a ton already. And he was born here. And it's been awesome. You know, kind of already bringing a new person into this world, and the way our program handles that is just unbelievable. So
well, let's talk a little bit about that. How, you know, you had a kid while on staff, you know, 8 months ago. Maybe what were some things that the coaching staff did to support you or head coach during that process?
Yes. Well, I didn't even get to be the focal point because we had another coach that had twins 2 months after me. So I was actually like the easy one. But we've always been very planned, my wife and I, about kids. Her job is more flexible, but we obviously have what I would say 2 legitimate times, which is either you can do it in December or you can do it in the summer, you know, and you have to choose in order to land those kind of easily without, you know, it being in the middle of the season. And so we've had 1 winter and 2 in the summer now. And so it wasn't it wasn't super tough. You're past those really hard weeks where you're at the hospitals and doing all that. That was all happening in the summer. But then when August rolls around, you know, that's where it's very important to have, you know, the wife, the mom that knew what she was signing up for. And obviously you just get home when you can. We don't have a clock here. Coach is, you know, he's very trusting with our time, and he's kind of the same way. He his his awesome background is that he was a single parent dad when he took over as a head coach here, and he knows it and he feels it. And he also can see it, you know, especially not so much with me because this was my third time around, but with our other coach that had twins, there's times you just have to send them. You got to send them home and tell them to go kind of hit reset. And cause it's innate, you know, if you're really meant to be in this business, you'll run yourself completely out. The job's never done. You can always watch more film. You can always do more stuff. You can always be on Twitter, and you can use every hour of the day, and traditionally sleeping's not a huge priority. And so our coaches, he's very in tune to that. And he's the same way. There's just sometimes when we got to stop and shut down and go get rested up. Cause there's only so many, you know, hours in the day where you can really be on. And that's a huge, huge balance here. And so I wouldn't say that I was a huge disruption. Coaches, you know, anytime I need to go, we go. You know, that's kind of how it goes. We've had, mine went through a little bit in terms of being born early, and he ended up having craniosynostosis. So he had to have surgery on his scalp and things that made it a little bit more of a crazy situation. He spent some time in the NICU. So I was jumping basically in the car after practice and driving to the Mayo Clinic right after practice and sitting with him for a couple hours in NICU, and then driving back over here for the next practice or the walkthroughs or whatever. So it was a crazy balance, but you wouldn't even know that it wasn't normal, kind of based on how our team handles it. I know that's not how it is normally, but that was also why I chose this job. Coach Sawyer, I've known for a few years. I've known a few guys now that have coached here that I've met along the way that, you know, just said, if family is number one for you, then it's a place that you should work, because he certainly treats it that way. And it's been awesome.
That's great that you work for such an awesome head coach. Let's move into a section I call We Make the Call and discuss how your family has navigated some of those important decisions throughout your career. Obviously, you guys met when you were a GA. So how are those early negotiations with your wife about continuing this as a profession?
Yeah. Well, we went through the worst. The one piece of advice I would give is do not move back to her hometown before you choose your job. Because that was... we went back and lived with her parents while I was looking for the job, knowing that we were going to move, you know, we were going to take whatever job kind of came. And so leaving there with her parents in the rearview mirror was like the hardest part of anything we've ever done. Certainly going from St. Louis to Nebraska was a huge move, but the negotiation piece of it, I have to take everything into account with that. She committed a ton of her life to getting her degree and knowing what she wanted to do. And we talked a lot about it. You know, when I chose my school in college, it was based on, I had already told them I wanted to be a college football coach. I chose that place because of the good coaching tree. And so they kind of groom you. They tell you certain things to look for. They kind of tell you what kind of wife and things. And so I was very upfront with Danny along the way, you know, of what sacrifices I was, not only that I wanted to make, but I was willing to make, you know, for this profession. And I do think just being upfront about that is hugely important. And there were some very tough times in the beginning, because not understanding time commitment when you're making $700 a month as a graduate assistant, but your every thought and every movement, every action is dictated by the program. It's hard for outsiders to understand that commitment and, you know, really the thought process that goes behind it. And I think it's something that you only learn through football. You know, you learn how to do all these things that you're being asked to do without really asking why. And so, as much as you can get that over to her preemptively, you know, it makes those conversations easier. But I think, you know, I think she probably had an idea of what she was getting into. And until we made that first move, I don't know that she knew for sure exactly how it was all going to shake out, but it's been a good ride so far.
When discussing a new job with your wife, what are things that you evaluate together before making a decision? And I think, you know, your kids probably weren't old enough to have any say in that at this point. So, but maybe in the future, will you involve your kids at all?
Yeah. You know, as I said, her job is huge and it's hugely important. I've landed twice now where actual hospitals have created positions for her. She looks a lot better than me and she's very confident. She has a lot of confidence talking to doctors and things like that. So she's hugely important in the medical field. And so that is number one. I have to find a place that has some sort of a hospital. I do think that when we have access to those, I don't have any doubt that she can find a place within those, you know, those situations, but I have to find her, you know, it has to be an option for her. I would never want her to walk away from the medical field based on my job, both because of her love for it and the fact that, you know, the medical field probably pays a lot better than the coaching field. So that always ends up being a thought. But she, you know, she's very in tune to what the staff makeup is in terms of whether there's kids or the, you know, the age of families. She's kind of the social director. She always wants to get girls' nights and things planned. She knows that time away from the house and honestly time away from husbands and things like that's important for everyone. And so getting the staff makeup is a huge deal. And then, like you said, we haven't involved the kids a ton. Hayden was old enough to know what was going on in this one. And probably the most heartbreaking part is, now he thinks it's normal. He thinks that we just move every couple of years. And you don't want that to be the case, you know, and I don't, you know, when we took this job, it was for that purpose to get him to a place where we could be in it for a little while. But if we did, you know, I would still, the most important thing for them is that we can still have them interested, have sports available, have outdoor activities available, and things like that. Those are the biggest things with our family is when we have a chance to go somewhere and do something, we want to be able to do it locally. Traveling with three kids isn't a ton of fun right now.
No.
And so if
I agree.
We have, you know, for instance here, we have a beach that is literally about a mile from our house in Winona. And so we can just jump in and we can go there and then we can come back and still do nap time. And that's, you know, keeping days consistent is hugely important for us.
The third series of questions I will call clock management. That's how you spend your time to blend football and family.
Sure.
When taking a new job, give our listeners maybe one recommendation about moving and one thing you would avoid.
Yeah. I'll just tell you what I did. In both scenarios, I went before, you know, and I think that's pretty typical. You know, most people can't just pick up and go right now. I went and I got the house just as close to home as I could get it, you know, and then basically you get the moving trucks and then it's boom, you bring the stuff in and you just try to make it as seamless as possible. Creating some sort of a fun time early in the move is a huge part. Like, you know, we made a move in Nebraska. As soon as we got to the new town in Nebraska, there was basically a version of a Chuck E. Cheese, and it's like, boom, let's go, and let's get everybody happy about being here. And as soon as we can kind of get the minds flipped about what is cool here and not comparing the two, that's huge. But the things to avoid, I think every family situation is going to dictate what you do. I think you always are just doing what you have to do. I don't know there's a ton of choice sometimes, but certainly if you can avoid the long times between, we had to go 6 months basically before this last move for me living here before they came. And that's the toughest swing.
is whenever there's those long, long chunks of time before you're living together. And it takes, you know, if I'm being honest, it takes a long time to get built back together once you get here after spending that much time apart. Getting everybody back to what's normal and all that stuff. That's the toughest part about it, in my opinion. So,
okay. That is definitely tough. I can't imagine living 6 months. And like you said, there has to be that repair time, you know, the time you got to earn some of the vibe back, exactly. Which I could definitely understand.
Yeah.
Other than weekly dinner, which I know a lot of guys talk about, what is a small thing you do to help your marriage during the season?
Well, the great thing about us, we feel like we're great parents, you know, and I know some people question, and when I'm at home, I try to be dad, and we have fun, and I'm on the floor, and we're wrestling around, and so we don't feel terrible about getting babysitters, and we have a lot of them available here. You know, anytime you're in one of these situations, usually feel pretty good about athletes, you know, soccer players or softball players or, you know, the ones that have great responsibility. so we use them. We do, you know, we'll do the date night thing. But we also, her job's busy too. So we'll go meet just for a lunch date, you know, and we'll call it our day date. And if we can sneak a couple of those in, you know, it's really all we need. We don't... There's enough crazy stuff that's going on. It only takes us about 10 minutes to get, you know, here's what happened to me today and here's what happened to you today, because most of our focus outside of work is our kids. And so, you know, if we tried to catch each other up on everything about our jobs, it would end up taking up a lot of time. And we don't, you know, in terms of our day-to-day stuff. The things that we talk about the most, like I kind of talked about, was the recruiting piece, because we both do so much of that. But aside from that, we try to shut off whenever we're together. Whenever we go to lunch, we're not talking about coworkers or things like that. It's just, you know, did you see, for instance, our 6-year-old teacher posts pictures on Facebook every day of their class stuff. And so, you know, if we can get a chance to peek at those real quick and get a glimpse of how his day's going, that's a huge, you know, huge kind of connection piece for us. But just spending time together, but away from your jobs and everything, is a huge part that we try to do, certainly.
Okay. Awesome. What is one thing you do on a semi-regular basis to help out with things on the home front?
Yeah, I always laugh because we're probably more of a tag team than a double team at home. You know, my big things that I love, I'm the homework guy. I think it keeps me sharp, counting the marbles and reading at the first grade level. But I do love that part, you know, sitting down with Hayden and going through his homework and having him show me what he did. That's a huge connection piece for me. And then the bath time thing, I get in there again, and they still right now, I don't know how much longer, you know, we'll do it, but they're getting pretty big to be in there now. But, you know, we go in there and they play and they get the boats and we do a full on bath time experience for everyone. And those are just, you know, those are times that I take that, you know, then the times where you have to be on and you have to be watching them, those are times I can take away and let my wife go, you know, maybe she can take that 30 minutes and just sit or maybe have a glass of wine or something. But I know that they're in there and I've got a hold of them, and you know, it gives her a full shut off minute. And those are the ones I try to get, you know. And then the little one, you know, again, because I don't require much sleep, I usually take the midnight wake up. He's usually waking up twice a night right now. And the good part is I don't need sleep and I can fall back asleep quickly. So I can get up, do what needs to be done, and I can lay back down and be asleep in a minute. So those are just the little things within our family that I try to do. Any minute I can give her, you know, my wife to just have go and sit and relax to herself, then I try to knock that out for sure.
Yeah, the hard part in my family now, the oldest is actually in fourth, which is the grade my wife teaches. So like, I'm not naive to the homework. I just get to like,
yeah.
You know, I wouldn't teach it that way. I'm like, well, yeah. I'm powerless at that point. So I'm like, you're right. You're teaching the same grade. You're in the classroom next to him, but I still want to help because I still think I'm smart, you know, in some ways. So, but yeah, I often get that look like, that's not what we talked about. All right, fine. I quit.
That's not how he's supposed to be doing that. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. You know, kids often stop by practice. That's a common answer we get in this question, but what are other ways you've seen coaches, kids be involved with the team or, you know, in their coaching commitments?
Yeah, so we have a heavy involvement here at Winona. Again, kind of reverting all the way back to Coach Sawyer, like I told you, being a single parent guy. But we have the guys over for dinner, which is kind of a norm, I think. But the kids are definitely the star of that show. You know, Hayden has learned to sit through position meetings already. He comes up and he wants to be around it. I'm not going to sit here and say that he's trying to be a guru. He just loves being in the room with the guys. I think he really likes the camaraderie part of it already, which is a huge thing for me that I love. We also do, on Mondays, we do family dinners. And so we stop the game plan at 6 o'clock and all the families show up here. And they figure out who's cooking what, and all the kids come up, and we go into one of the two kind of meeting rooms and set up dinner, and we let the kids run around like crazy people, and, you know, we shut down the football world for about an hour, which is awesome because that's really the long game planning day. And so just kind of getting that reset, it's really nice, and it lets the kids come up and kind of see the place and see that we're up here working and what we're doing. So those are kind of the ways we get those guys involved.
I love the idea of the family dinners. I know, you know, at higher levels, you know, guys will bring their families in, they have the training table and whatnot, but I think that's neat that you potluck it.
Yeah.
You all, it's away from the players, and it's just, that's a very, it seems a little bit different. It seems a little bit more special than just, you know, someone else is serving us dinner. So,
absolutely.
I like that. That's awesome. What, if any, events have you attended during the season? And what discussion, if any, have you had with your head coach about that? Like to see your kids.
Sure. Yeah, it doesn't, you know, there's not a lot of, I kind of keep re-saying it. There's not a lot of discussion you have to have with coach about it. He's very trusting once he hires you that you're going to get your job done. And so as long as it fits within that, fundraisers and things. They had a hawk walk at my son's school, and I went, but I also had all my O-line and tight ends go too. So we went over there after lunch, and about 25 of us did his little fundraising walk. You know, he's got soccer, but obviously, yeah, we're just getting into kind of the fun scheduling stuff. And it is nice because I get to watch, again, our other coaches on staff that have teenagers, and I know there's going to be obstacles coming and kind of see how they're already doing it. And they, you know, recruiting visits, for instance, we have Friday, Saturdays, and then Saturday, Sundays, and there's about a three-hour break in there where a couple of our coaches have to take off and they go to basketball games for those 3 hours, and then they come back to do the other part. And you know, everyone's got to pick up and make sure we hit the reset and take care of the stuff here. But the fact that those guys can go get those 3 hours in and watch their kids play basketball or whatever it is, that's a huge deal. And so I'm excited that I'm at a place right now where that's a possibility, where we can take whatever, you know, whatever minutes there are, we can take those and use them to the best kind of to help our families.
How do you manage your phone time when you're at home?
Yeah, that's my worst part, honestly. And I'm a heavy Twitter guy. I bought into the fact that guys would rather text than call, and so I am on it a ton. But I do try to make sure, if I'm very cognitive of, if my kids are in the room and engaged, then it'll be out of my hand. If they're in the room and they're watching their iPad or something, then I'm probably doing some sort of work. I'm probably doing something, or if they're in another room. But if they're not, you know, looking at a screen, or, you know, if they're in there looking for attention, then I'm going to give it to them in every second that they're there. So I'm very quick to put it down. If I hear them walk into the room, I'll put it down and make eye contact and make sure they know I'm available. And if they want that, then great. And if they don't, and they want to buzz right by and go do something else, then that's great. But I'm always going to make sure I'm available when they walk into a room or whenever we're hanging out. And then if they choose otherwise, then I usually kind of go back to the work part. And like I said, that's probably the thing I get the complaint the most from my wife, but she's very understanding. It's not that I'm attached on my end. I just know that our livelihood is controlled by 18 to 22 year old guys, and they can switch mindsets at the drop of a hat. And so you have to be there, you know, and ready to help. And so I am for the most part.
Yeah. I like that idea of a policy, you know, like you said, hard to get mad if your kids are on an iPad or watching a movie, you know, but like you said, if they're up and they're willing and they're interested, then you're interested. And I think that's a really
It's a
good teaching point for our coaches, right? It's a good cue that you can respond to. Hey, are my kids willing to play, or are they tuned out to something else? So I like that.
Yeah.
There, you know, there's a common saying amongst coaches that the person with the marker last will win. How do you avoid being too analytical every week and therefore spend maybe unnecessary time preparing?
Yeah. This is a discussion I've had at almost every place I've been. You know, I'm very aware that part of the reason that I get job opportunities and calls is because of where I came from. And I was at Northwest Missouri when we went to 5 straight national championships, and I played in 2 and I got to coach in 3 of them. And the process of it all is hugely interesting to outsiders and people. And I think that trust is probably the number one piece to everything that I learned at that place, and the trust in the, you know, the game planning aspect is as important as anything. And if you put guys in charge, if I'm in charge of the run game, you know, then there's really no time to go back and figure out whether I did that job correctly or not until after the season. Because once you're in the season, you're running and you're going. And I do think that if everybody in the place just accepts or really trusts that everybody else in that institution is working as hard and as best that they can, then it just works more efficiently. And everywhere I've been, that's been the factor. It's been, and it's not that it's a glowing thing that tears people apart, but if you walk in and someone's questioning why we're doing this or why we're doing that, you know, certainly discussion is different than distrust. You know, if we want to know what's best, then absolutely you should talk about it. But if you're questioning it because you don't think another person's competent or because of other issues, then now it just brings up a ton of different things. So I think staying on your process, trusting it, believing in your process is a huge part. Your head coach is there to hire the people to make sure that the processes are working correctly. And if everybody underneath him just works their tail off and doesn't question the people around them, then you don't have a ton of those situations and you don't overanalyze. You just go in there and you work and you work as hard as you can and as long as you can for whatever time's allotted. But I think sectioning it off is a huge piece. Everywhere I've been, Northwest included, there were guys in charge of run game. There were guys in charge of fourth downs and third downs and different pieces, and we trusted that everybody did their due diligence in tearing those situations apart and made sure that they had the answers for them. And we do a lot of the same stuff here. We walk in there and I'm in charge of putting what we're going to run, you know, when we run the ball, and Coach Keller does the play action and pass game, and then we tie it all together. And then we, you know, we do the situational stuff the next day together, and we watch them, and the collaboration of it all is hugely important, because if it if it falls on one person, it ends up making everyone else look like want to be informed about why those decisions are made. I think that if you involve everybody in the game plan, then it takes a lot of those questions away. So that's my piece on it. It is a tough world because football coaches are very confident. They're, some of them have ego thoughts and some of them have different ways of doing things. And I think trusting each other is the biggest part of it. There is always the last, the person with the marker last can win because there's always answers. But just building your product is, I think, my most important part of that.
The final set of questions we'll call prevent defense, and hopefully, probably providing some bigger picture things that maybe a coach can prevent from losing what's most important.
Sure.
Can you share one of the struggles you've had to overcome as a family during your career, and what lessons other coaches can learn from it?
Yeah. One of the biggest. This was a situation that was very, important to us was the, our son that was just born this last summer. Again, he was born 5.5 weeks early and spent time in the NICU, and then he's had multiple surgeries now. And developing or already having an established connection with the staff and the staff's families and the support system is a huge piece. I mean, there were times that other coaches picked our kids up from school and took them until we got back from the hospital. There were times that I told you that I had to kind of buzz out the second practice was over to get somewhere. And Danny had a job at that time, too. And so all those things, creating a support system is, I think, one of the most important pieces. When you move to a new place, it's so easy to just say, I don't know anyone. And we don't have, we don't have support or we don't have family around. But there are, there are tons of caring people that you can make connections with if you try. And I do think that it's a lot of the time it's on us as the male, because we're the ones that moved them. And, creating those bonds and things are sometimes stuff that you have to initiate. But I think that's probably the most important part is creating a system of family and being able to lean on each other and things like that. And, having a head coach that does, that's a huge piece of that too.
What is one aspect of parenting that you think carries over into coaching?
We believe that's everything here. And at the end of the day, we want people to look at the men from our program and judge us off their success of fathers, husbands, and like leaders and, in whatever profession they choose. So we just want to make sure we're always being role models for that. When my son's around, you still have to be a parent. So if he's not being good, you have to keep your cool. You have to show guys, there's times that I get very mad too, and I have to make the right decision and I have to control myself and teach him. And, there's things that happen that are out of our control, especially when it comes to families. And the way you react to those situations, it's no different than football. When things happen outside your control, the way you react is oftentimes what dictates good teams and bad teams. And so always looking calculated, even though, you rarely are. But
ain't that the truth?
that's the part you're trying to get across to those guys. It's all, everybody's dealing with stuff and we're all living 1 second at a time, but having thoughts and not jumping to every reaction and stuff like that, those are the things that you want guys to pick up. That's what makes great football players, guys that play games within games and do all that stuff. And so I do think all that ties back in to growing men and them getting to see how you interact with everybody. I have them over to our family, to my house, and I want them to see everything. I mean, there's no doubt when you have 20 guys over that a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old are going to show out and they're going to be doing things you're going to have to stop. And so, you know, you have to be in those situations and you want them to see that. And so, and you have to deal with them trying to get them to do naughty things because that happens too. So.
Yes. They're like all the crazy uncles, right?
Yeah, exactly. The first time they'd ever, my 6-year-old ever saw Fortnite was because my players pulled it up on our PlayStation. So we had to make that disappear. But yeah, I mean, you know, they're the worst uncle and grandparents you ever have. Meanwhile, showing them how to just eat like pigs. So that's also right. Great.
Oh, that's funny. Lessons learned on both sides.
Exactly.
Staying on the, you know, the theme of players, and like you said, you have them over for a meal, and that's kind of tradition amongst most coaches. How do you make them feel valued outside of their performance on the field?
Yeah. You know, I do tie my wife into it. You know, she sends baked items and certainly shows that she cares about them, and she knows that their success on the field is my success and that they're a reflection of me. And so that's important for them to know. And then most of that I address in the recruiting part. I tell them, you know, first of all, I'm not old and I don't act old and I don't sit across from you in a chair and say, I'm the coach and you sit there and be quiet. And that's not how I coach. I need to get to know them. I need to know their families. I need to know what they're struggling with. I need to know if they need help. And I tell them that in the recruiting process. In fact, one of the things I tell almost everybody in the recruiting process is obviously I like to talk. And when you leave, you're going to either look at your parents and say, man, that guy was full of crap. Or you're going to say, I would really like to play for that guy. And whatever your feeling was, that's probably the feeling you should go with. Because I'm going to be there every day talking to you about much more than football. And I'm going to tie everything in. And so that is really where the caring part comes in. I mean, our guys, they know I love them. When I sit here, I tear them apart. And I tell them that that still has nothing to do with you as a person or you, you know, outside of when we step on the green field. Everything else in the world, I think you're going to be phenomenal. And I want to help, you know, it's my job to make sure that you're the best in all aspects of it. So that's the hardest. I mean, the being very clear in communication is the toughest part, you know, but we definitely try to show them that they're valued always, whether they're helping us on the field or not. I mean, that's what's important.
I agree. Very well communicated. What's one thing maybe you've changed personally in the last 3 years that's helped you be either a more efficient or more effective coach?
Clear communication is the one. And that's when you're a young coach, it's hard. You don't want to hurt feelings, you know, or maybe you came out as a young coach and you were a complete a-hole and you liked hurting feelings. But I think
some of those guys.
Absolutely. And I think as it goes along, you figure out the middle ground. But I'm completely honest with guys about where they stand. I have multiple sit downs throughout the year, both about grades and about other, you know, their field situations and all that stuff. And I make sure that they know where I stand. And again, you know, reiterating that has nothing to do with them as a person. It's just, it's my job. Whenever you commit here, I'm committing to you to say, I'm going to make you the best you. And I can't let them slip in any of those situations or regards. So if I feel like there's a break in commitment or something like that, then I have to be honest with them. And some of those are tough conversations. But I do think, again, at the end of the day, if they know that they come from love and care, and in this office they do, and they know that, then that. But it took a while to get there. I mean, because there's a fine line. There's a fine line between being too nice and being too hard, and you know when they think you're trying to run them off, and in the ways you word things. And so the communication piece is something that I've continued to work on. You know, making sure guys know exactly where I stand. But I definitely, it's always going to be a work in progress. Communication, you know, with people that are younger is always going to be changing. And so it's important for me, you know, and us to continue to change and evolve as that's changing. So.
Yeah. Because I notice, you know, as I'm a high school teacher and a coach, and some of those conversations, as much as they would probably prefer it, you can't have over text. You have to have those face to face, and no one, that's becoming more uncomfortable for both sides, I would think, because there is an easy tendency to be able to have a text conversation, but you know, you really have to have some of those face to face. You got to look them in the eye, and you got to deal with the emotions. And like you said, you have to look calculated, even though you very rarely are, you know, so.
yeah, absolutely.
Well, we're already on to our last question. It's a little bit longer of a question, but I think it's worth, you know, kind of drawing out a little bit. And I call it victory formation. You know, when the outside world looks at a coach, you are always judged on the wins and losses or the accomplishments of your players. But the potential legacy a coach could have on his players and his family is much more of a lasting value that really can't be measured by any one statistic. What legacy or impact are you striving to create through coaching that maybe you couldn't do in any other profession?
I've always wanted to do this, and I was impacted early, and I had it wasn't that I didn't have a great male figure. I had a phenomenal dad that never missed a game, but I still had a coach that found a way to connect with me and change me for the better and send me in a direction. And that, you know, I try to have that impact on guys, whether they end up being all Americans. And I've, you know, the great thing is I've coached 3 first team all Americans in my 10 years. So I've had the best, and I coach those guys the exact same way as I coach the guys that will never step on the field for me. And when guys leave here, and when people see the guys that have come under me, and I hope it's this way no matter what level or what position I'm in, I hope I'm producing genuinely honest and nice people. I mean, it's a fine line, and I kind of embodied that as a football player. When I was on the field, I knew how to act, and when I was off the field, I knew how to act. And I have a lot of situations when I was growing up and a lot of situations I've been through that I can offer guys, and never being, you know, not letting them use anything as a crutch is a huge part for me, is a huge piece for me. Everything that happens to you should be a motivator, you know, not something that takes away from you. Whether if it's something bad, then you do something good to not ever be in that situation or any of that. And so the guys that have finished underneath me, or, you know, guys that I've coached, end up embodying all of that. And if they don't, then usually they just don't make it. We don't connect on the level we need to, and they usually end up stopping. But everything I'm doing, everything I'm saying is to create a world that is going to get them ready for when they're done with football. I talk about it all the time. When you're talking about big people, and when, you know, I'm offensive line guy, I've played it, I'm around them. There's really only 2 types of them in the world. There's the type that garner your attention, that warrant your attention. They walk around with their chest up, you know, their head held high, and they take the world on. And then there's other big people that you want to avoid and you stay away from. And the guys that come through the program, the guys that come under me, will learn how to be confident. They'll learn how to talk. They'll learn how to communicate with everyone, with their families, with their wives, with their employers. They'll learn how to make decisions and not look back. I think that's a huge part of anything. Make educated decisions and live with the results. And so those are all pieces where, as I've gone through this, is I want to create, you know, there's just different type of people in the world. I want to create the big guys that walk around that are ready to take the world on, you know, not the ones that you see that are always fighting depression and bad situations and weight loss and stuff like that. I want to create a different brand of a big person because, you know, there's some good dudes, you know, and they, they end up, people are going to look at you because you're 6'6 or 6'5 and 300 pounds. So you might as well give them something good. You might as well give them a good product and a leader and all of that. And so I really try to put anybody that makes it through that and make sure that they do know how to communicate and they know how to do things with confidence and they don't question themselves. And that's a process. And I think all of that ties into being a great football player, that the whole piece of that, when you step on the field, you know, if you're going against a person that has great confidence or, you know, knows what he's doing and all of that. So those are the guys, you know, those any, at any level, again, at any position, whoever I get to be in charge of, those people are the ones that I want to churn out, are the ones that warrant attention, that people want to be led by. And so if as long as that's happening, then that's, I'm good with all that.
Awesome. That was a phenomenal answer. I do appreciate it. I'm obviously an O-line guy and do some O-line training and stuff like that. So we talk about being living big, and I think that's exactly what you embody. So we do appreciate the time. Best of luck in this off season. Obviously, take care of my guy CJ Haney up there.
Absolutely.
We look forward to following you, obviously, this upcoming season.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.